Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, free rights and civil rights for poor people, street people, and you people out there. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Robert Norse, and today is January 6, 2000. New year, new decade, difficult to remember, new century. And interviews coming up. We have an interview from jail with Steve Argue, an interview from the Homeless Community Center with Homeless Services Center Director Ken Cole. We're hoping to contact Fred Geiger on the telephone to talk about the cancerous growth of parking structures downtown. And we're going to get Scott Graham on the other side giving a critique of the Broadway-Bromer bicycle path. Apparently tonight there is a special meeting of pedal power over at the National Natural Museum, History Museum on East Cliff. So we're going to try to cram all this stuff and more on today's edition of Bathrop Spears Broadside 6 to 8. So stay with us. Well, we're talking to a man on the street here at what we call Hippie Planter near New Leaf Market. It's around 6 o'clock. We're talking to, how would you like to be known?
Scott Claude.
And Scott, you're a lanky fellow, and last night, around 8 o'clock, Officer Over had some words with you, is that right?
Well, yeah, it started off when he was trying to steal our bags and stuff. He asked if anybody owned them, and we hesitated for a couple of seconds, and he was already picking up the bags and ready to take them into his car.
Was he alone, or did he have fellow thugs in blue with guns with him?
There was four or five others all within the area.
Was his sidekick, Officer Eveleth, from Days of Yore with him?
I don't know.
I heard somebody say yesterday was, but I wasn't there.
So. Right. So
what?
And I just, came up to claim the stuff as mine. And it wasn't actually mine, it was somebody else's, but mine was right there, too, in the mix, and so I claimed it and stuff as mine.
And what did Officer Over say?
I don't really remember him saying, he didn't really even apologize or anything about it.
What did he say? You were there? Your name?
Pumpernickel.
And Pumpernickel, you heard Officer Over speak?
Yeah, you were trying to, say, come on, guy, it's Christmas, we're not hurting nobody. And he's just like, you attract vermin, your lazy attitudes, with your lazy attitudes.
Somebody say something about the rights of people outside. And
yeah, somebody mentioned it just in the crowd, just like, hey, what about homeless rights? And he was just like, what rights? Tell me one of them. Just like, you guys don't have rights, give me a break,
So he had this interchange with you, but he didn't take the your friend's property, right?
No, he didn't take.
He gave you that second warning, though.
What was the second warning?
He just said, "Don't you remember me? I'm the one that gave you that warning this morning."
We're sitting on the sidewalk.
Where were you sitting?
On the other side of the sidewalk, down towards the coffee house down there.
A coffee roasting company.
Yeah.
So you were engaged in, we were within 10 feet of a store window?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How could you do such a thing?
It's just natural.
Well, that's the example of the kind of criminal mentality that good officers like Over and Eveleth are trying to stamp out here on the Pacific Avenue. Any other comments from this group here?
I was wondering how they did the hiring for the police. I don't know if you know anything about that, if they're from out of town or they live in town.
I don't know, but I know that officers tend to kind of rotate from department to department. One bad officer goes to another department, gets hired there, and sometimes you hear how bad officers engage in shooting incidents and
Now, that was the claim of Charles Vaughn Jr., whose father was shot a year ago in Seaside off the roof of a building by police officers, allegedly for having a corkscrew in his hand.
And we don't have a corkscrew in our hands. We might get nasty with our latest caller here, having the line with us, Scott Graham. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. And, Scott, you're a man who knows how to fix cars, knows how to fix bikes, but is particularly concerned with, I guess, tonight's meeting of Pedal Power, where there may be a discussion of the Broadway-Bromer bike path?
Yeah, People Power is putting on some kind of alternative transportation seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably going to turn out to be just the guys to promote this Broadway-Bromer bike path, which is going to be more than just a bike path. The environmental impact report has it down as being a 12-foot wide, basically road, you know, one-lane road, which would have a 700-foot bridge and a 400-foot bridge in it, and it would be capable of supporting emergency vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if there's any great need for fire trucks to get out there to Arana Gulch or any other kind of emergency vehicles. I think the only emergency vehicles that will probably be out there will more than likely be the police and the park rangers.
Now, this is the area that's, let's say, if you were heading toward, Capitola, heading out kind of along, Soquel Avenue, or maybe along Broadway dead ends, and then that's the Arena Gulch kind of wilderness-type area?
Right. Yeah, it's part of the Santa Cruz Green Belt. You know, voters voted to make it part of the Green Belt and
mm-hmm.
actually tax themselves to buy the land and everything, and now all of a sudden there's development plans for it.
So this is something that, the bicyclists are supporting the development?
Well, there's a few bicycle people that are in favor of this thing, but a lot of bike riders are also environmentalists, and so they don't want this, you know, real invasive type of road built through here. And the fact that it's, you know, being built big enough and the bridges are being built wide enough and sturdy enough to hold emergency vehicles makes it kind of onerous, you know. I mean, there's
You suspect the hand of Chief Belcher in this, perhaps?
Well, the police, the fire department, and the Harbor Commission are the only people that are in favor of having it wide enough for emergency vehicles. Actually, the most of the bicycle people, even the ones that are in favor of this path, don't want it big enough for vehicles to be on. And
the reason for that is because you think it would encourage a more development, but also you mentioned a particular concern for homeless people, I guess.
Well, yeah, as most people, I guess, are aware, around town here in Santa Cruz, one of the few options homeless people have that want to find some place to camp is to go into the Greenbelt, whether it's the West Side Greenbelt or the Pogo Nip or the Arana Gulch East Side Greenbelt. One of those three places, I mean, they're all occupied by homeless people. You know, they're not. So I think part of this whole reasoning for building a path capable of supporting emergency vehicles is so the police will have easy access to Arana Gulch and then be able to arrest the homeless people out there easier. Find people, you know, that are partying possibly out there. I don't know, you know, there could be other activities happening there that us normal citizens aren't aware of, but the police would like to put a stop to.
How long has this path been in the works, you know?
A number of years now. I mean, it's gone through a number of review processes, and every time it's been shot down. Now, hopefully, our new progressive city council will decide the same thing as the councils before them, that this isn't really something that they want to do to the Greenbelt.
Is this the same Progressive City Council that kept the sleeping ban and is planning to evict all the Dolvin Lee tenants you're talking about?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you think that there perhaps is more of a chance on this particular environmental issue?
Well, I think, you know, there's most of the environmental groups in town, the Sierra Club and things, are all against this. So I'm not sure. You know, and then there's the Open Space Alliance and the Greenbelt, Save Our Greenbelt Committee and all these other groups.
The People Power, which is a bicycle group, is meeting tonight out at the Natural History Museum in Heathcliff.
Right. It's the place that has the whale in front of it.
That's
it's out, in, you know, at the end of Seabright. Heathcliff goes there.
It's 7 o'clock tonight?
7 o'clock, yeah.
And you're going to be out there listening and talking, perhaps?
Yeah, hopefully.
And I guess you're—I know I talked to Micah Posner, if that's his proper pronunciation, myself. He tells me that they don't favor a 12-foot-wide path, but they favor an 8-foot-wide path. What's your reaction to that?
Well, the whole thing is the environmental impact report isn't analyzing an 8-foot-wide path. That's not an option. In this environmental impact report, there's two different paths, one of which comes way too close to the wetlands, so it's almost infeasible that they would even consider that. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the requirements of an environmental impact report, is that you have your main goal, you know, the main thing you want to do, and then you're supposed to have alternatives to that. And the alternatives are supposed to be workable alternatives with less environmental impact. Instead, they have a unworkable alternative with even more environmental impacts.
Hmm. And what's the, like, the timetable for passage of this if the council decides it does want to move with it?
Well, right now the environmental impact report came out in November, and so that has a 60-day circulation period where the public can respond to it, and that's available at the public library, or you can go buy a copy at Kinko's. It's about $40.
Wow.
But
what kind of response are you suggesting people might make?
Well, what you have to do with an environmental impact report, you have to respond. You have to write questions and comments on the inadequacy of the environmental impact report. It's, you know, sort of a formal process.
Mm-hmm.
And this environmental impact report is pretty weak. And I mean, they completely forgot, you know, a couple of endangered species that are supposed to inhabit the area and stuff like that, you know. And they want to cut down a whole bunch of trees. And see, the other problem with this is not only, you know, building this thing through an environmental, one of the few environmentally sensitive areas we have left in this town, but there's also a bunch of other things that may come after it, like a baseball field or a soccer field, or a elementary school, or there may even be a small housing development on part of the land.
But that's the wave of the future there, Scott.
Well, the whole thing is the future, I mean, that could be all built up and look like L.A., or it could be just remain an open field, an open meadow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 5 generations from now, it could still be an open meadow if nobody does anything to it right now.
It's interesting that sometimes environmentalists and homeless rights advocates are kind of arrayed against each other, as, for instance, when there was a concern about the camping ban or the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, and people were worried about campers in the Poganip, and you yourself have expressed some apprehensions about messy campers. But in this issue, it looks like you're suggesting homeless people have an interest in making sure the advocates for homeless people, making sure that this bike path remains less than, as currently proposed, does not happen, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's obviously just a way for, you know, the police, I guess, are feeling angst over not being able to patrol every square inch of the city or something. So since there's these big open fields there and, like, little gullies that people hide out in and stuff, they'd much rather be able to drive through there and shine their million candle power light down at people.
Well, they also have their infrared detectors, I understand, at least on one squad car, infrared heat detectors.
Right.
For catching those difficult-to-find homeless bodies at night.
Well, most of them aren't they at warm anyway, so they may not be able to detect them anyway.
Well, if Willie
people
Brown can do it.
People are freezing there under the bushes.
Yeah,
you know?
Good point, yeah. I mean, the colder you get, the less likely you are to be found. So, you know,
right.
Hypothermia as a protective mechanism.
Leave your sleeping bag at home.
Now, so in other words, just because people check out this at the library, can people give you a call and ask you more about it personally in order to kind of be directed in the right direction? Is that a possibility, or maybe what we should do is, if people are interested in this issue, the issue of the Broadway-Brommer proposed bicycle
slash vehicle path, you can give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUF, and I will pass you on to Scott to turn you into one of his many minions opposing this project. How does that sound, Scott?
Oh, it sounds great, Robert.
One other question for you. I know that there's recently been a decision on environmental impact, but some sort of impact regarding the skateboarding park, which Carol Long filed an appeal on after it was... This is the park over on the west side, which she opposed. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, the skate park? Well, the Sentinel, I mean, and that's the only problem. Is I haven't heard officially that what the Sentinel reported is true. And the Sentinel says that Carol Long filed an appeal with the Coastal Commission, because anybody can do that. You know, if you don't like something, there's an environmental impact report written about that's within the coastal zone, then you can file an appeal to the Coastal Commission, and the Coastal Commission can either deny your appeal right off the bat and say, well, this thing doesn't have any merit, so we're not going to hear it, or it can find that you have merit, and they do hear your appeal. And the other, I guess it was last week sometime, the Sentinel reported that the Coastal Commission was going to hear the appeal. And on New Year's Eve, I saw Mayor Sugar and asked him about it, and he told me that he had heard just the opposite of what the Sentinel had reported, that the Coastal Commission had decided that her appeal was without merit, and that because of the...
That's what I read in the Sentinel, that they decided the appeal was without merit.
No, what I read in the Sentinel was that they decided that they would hear it.
Well, if any Sentinel reporters are listening to this,
or
I
maybe
encourage you to give a call
maybe you
immediately.
Heard the, maybe you read the correction. Maybe I read it the first day when
they
had it wrong.
I think we needed a Sentinel to give us a call immediately at 427-3772, or any other listeners, by the way, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 3772. Scott, is there more you want to say?
I was just wondering if you caught Lee Quanstrom's article the other day in the...
Lee's sort of New Year's imaginings.
Yeah.
His fondest hopes.
Where they're going to build a statue to... I don't know if it's to you or to himself. I think he's kind of jealous that he really wants to be the king of the bums.
Well, he's sort of a surfer bum, you know. I mean, I'm kind of more of a, what would you call it, homeless, civil rights-oriented bum. I'm not homeless myself, of course, and don't represent myself.
Right, he just wants to wear a Hawaiian shirt and get drunk over near the West Coast
somewhere.
There you
go. Now, that's a man who knows how to have a good time. although, you know, I've always wondered if Lee's red nose has anything to do with his tendency to drink, if he has such a tendency, and these kind of scandalous speculations have no place in a serious radio program of this sort. But yeah, I did read the column, and I know he talked about a statue of the King of the Bums, which is traditionally what he's called me. I tend to try to reciprocate the honor by calling him the Baron of the Bigots. So
right.
There we are.
You have the Hobo Festival email address.
I do, and those hobos, you know, they're a pretty roaming lot. They've got their, you know, their trains. They're pretty good at catching them. We occasionally, of course, have had interviews on the air of you know, real train catchers. That's not the right word, of course. Hobos.
Rail riders.
Rail riders, sidewinders, I don't know what you call them, diesel lovers. Anyway, I'm glad to have talked to you, Scott. I'm gonna roll on in case anybody has any comments or wants to call in.
Okay,
maybe the Sentinel will call in with a correction. We can always hope.
Yeah, maybe Daryl Cole will call in.
Daryl Cole? No, he never listens to this show.
But
Ken Cole will be on the air later talking to us, actually, in a taped interview about the Homeless Service Center and then the Homeless Issues Task Force's latest Please Stop Arresting the Sleeping People resolution, which, of course, Mayor Sugar has dumped in the deep freeze.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Scott. Is there more you want to say? Or
no, that's it, Robert. I just hope people will realize that this bike path isn't really a bike path. It's actually a patrol path.
And they can join you out at 7 o'clock to learn more about it out there at the Natural History Museum.
And next Wednesday, the Transportation Commission will be discussing the environmental impact report at their meeting. Mm-hmm. They already held a public hearing on it, and they ended the public hearing without having their own discussion.
When is that meeting and where?
That'll be Wednesday at the City Hall.
And that'll be at?
7 o'clock at City Council Chambers.
Right, so that'll actually be the day after the city council meeting.
Right, it'll be the next night they'll have a transportation commission meeting.
Fair enough. So if they can't make it tonight out to the where the whales are roosting, then they can come tomorrow to where the Gang of Seven normally has its meetings.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye.
If you'll marry me, I'll give you everything I have. You won't ever need to earn a penny. I will be your man, and the ring upon your hand will show the world that you're my darling Annie.
Thank you, love, I'll be glad to add your wages onto mine. I can work and keep myself so handy. You can be my man without a golden wedding band, and I'll tell the world that I'm your Annie.
For it's love, love will hold us, love is everything. Who could dream of anything that's better? Not the bow, not the string, not the golden wedding ring. Just you, love, you and me together. If you'll marry me, I will give to you my name. It will shield you from idle talk and envy. For when you play the game, you're secure from any blame. Not ashamed to be my darling Annie.
Thank you, love, I'm grateful for the offer of your name. But my own will do as well as any. I don't like the game, and the rules wouldn't make me change. Not the same girl you married, not your Annie.
For it's love, love will hold us, love is everything. Who could dream of anything that's better? Not the bow, not the string, not the golden wedding ring. Just you, love you and me together. If you'll marry me, we'll get a house and settle down. A place to call our own so neat and canny. With a family and a home, love, you'll never feel alone. Left on the shelf, a spinster darling Annie.
Dearest love, we could surely find a place to call our own. All we need is some influence and money. But I don't need a ring or a house or anything to become a mother or a granny.
For it's love, love will hold us, love is everything. Who could dream of anything that's better? Not the bow, not the string, not the golden wedding ring. Just to love you and me together. If you'll marry me, I will be faithful unto death. You will have all my love and my attention. We will care, we will share life in sickness and in health. And when I die, you can draw the widow's pension.
I will live with you and I'll be faithful unto death. We will share all the burdens we must carry. We'll always be free, me for you and you for me. But when we're old, well, maybe we should marry.
For it's love, love will hold us, love is everything. Who could dream of anything that's better? Not the bow, not the string, not the golden wedding ring. Just you, love you and me together.
January 4th, 2000 already. Mamma mia. I'm in front of the library across the street with activist Tracy DeAngelis. Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Robert.
Tracy, you are active in the movement for justice for Bami Abu Jamal, and also justice for the folks locally. I've often been grumbling that people in jail here locally don't get the press that Abu Jamal gets, Mr. Fancy Pants, big media guy. But you've been running around with the Cop Watch, and on New Year's Eve, I guess you were doing that too.
Yeah, I went out with about five other people. We were out for the earlier part of the evening from about 5:30 to about 9. We had two scanners, two walkie-talkies, and we split up, you know, periodically. And it was amazing how many cops were out there. Literally, of course, the Watsonville police were out. I think 50 of them were dispatched over here. And every single cop on the Santa Cruz Police Force was out. So literally on every corner you saw groups of cops, mostly just standing around. It was a pretty uneventful night in terms of cop watching. We did see a couple of arrests. The first arrest took place on the corner of Cedar and Walnut. It was apparently a drunk man was getting put into the paddy wagon, and it was Martin Over, Connor Carey, Officer Harms, and I don't know who the fourth cop was.
Was he a middle-class drunk or a lower, homeless-type drunk?
He appeared that he was probably neither. He was probably just a regular guy like you or me, guy. But I only saw him from behind. But it was mostly the evening was entertaining more than anything. Myself and a couple others were kind of messing with the cops, and it's funny how sometimes they don't realize that you're fucking with them and they think you're being friendly. But in this particular situation, I think you'll find interest in this. I recognized Harms, I recognized Over, and we were taking pictures of them, and I said, "And who are you?" And I pointed at the third cop that I didn't recognize. He said, "Oh, I'm Connor." I said, "Oh, you're Connor Carey, you're the murderer." And he says, "Yep," with a huge smile on his face. And then he looked at me again and he pointed his finger at me and he said, "I remember you." And that's from the May 22nd incident when he was pushing me back with a baton when I was watching Steve Argue get beat up. So that was one interaction. Another interaction was, we asked the Watsonville PD why they were there, and they said, well, to be available in the cause of a riot. And I said, well,
widespread terrorism we're expecting.
Yeah, I said, well, I understand that at midnight, no matter what, you guys are going to have your riot gear on. Don't you think that's a little inflammatory? And he said, well, we're just highly prepared for the event that something should happen. And it was basically an uneventful night.
Were you there at midnight?
I was not there at midnight, but I've talked to other folks that were out, and pretty uneventful. No trouble at all in terms of the police that we know of, hurting anybody, harming anybody. So I just think it was, altogether, it was a pretty uneventful night. It was a pretty low-key crowd downtown.
Well, because of the fine police work, no doubt.
Oh, yes, of course, yes. Our Santa Cruz finest was out in full force.
Well, there was a lot of media hype in the week and a half before about terrorists this, terrorists that, big police training. And I understand that the celebration on this first night was less than the number of people last year.
Yeah.
Perhaps because of apprehensions of, I don't know whether apprehensions about police or apprehensions about the crowd or apprehensions of Y2K computer failures or...
Yeah, I heard that actually that everywhere it was pretty low key. I'm thinking maybe people were... I mean, myself, I didn't really think anything was going to happen at midnight in terms of the Y2K stuff, but I'm thinking maybe people wanted to be close to home in case something did, but... I mean, you know, I don't think anybody... I think, unfortunately, the majority of people in Santa Cruz felt safe with that number of cops out there. Personally, I found it offensive.
Did you talk to any citizens about how they regarded the police presence?
No, but that would have been a good thing to do.
Well, next year you could do that.
Next year, yes, I'll do that. But we are still cop watching Wednesday nights. Meet us at the Rhizone, 224A Walnut Street, 7:30.
Thank you, Tracy. Anything else? Any other announcements? How's Steve Argue doing in jail? I know you've been in touch with him.
Yeah, Steve Argue's doing okay. He's still being held in isolation for refusing to give up a blanket, but we are circulating a petition inside of the jail, and I'm working on one for outside of the jail. His health is okay, and he's writing poetry, and he's writing and studying, and he seems to be in pretty okay spirits, so... Yeah, if you want to get on his visiting list, call 425-4467, and we can walk you through how to do that.
Now, is he in isolation, or is he in solitary? Is there a difference?
I don't think there's a difference. As far as I understand, it's 23 hours. He's in his own little cell, and he's let out, if they remember, 1 hour a day.
You know this shameless jaywalker behind you who's just arrived?
Hey! Yeah, I do. I know him.
Stop him before he jaywalks again. So, Mike, you say there's a man getting camping tickets who's a paraplegic.
Yeah, his name is Tom Dunham. He happens to be a little sensitive about being referred to as a disabled person. Mm-hmm. He's in denial. Okay, approximately when he was 25 years old, I'd say about 15 years ago, he was a taxi cab driver in Texas. Mm-hmm. And one of his fares turned out to be an assailant. And shot him 3 times through the groin and rendered him paraplegic. Well, as long as I've known him, he's been living in the street.
Here's the man with the booze.
And finally, a police officer got him over at Harvey West and actually expressed some sense of satisfaction at clearing out the people who are staying at Harvey West, and was very, very insensitive and harsh to this man. And I know him.
You know when this happened, Mike?
This happened approximately a month ago.
And do we know the name of the officer?
I can get the name of the officer. I wouldn't want to give it right now. Perhaps I might be mistaken.
Right.
But it's confusing to me why the need defense in a court of law does not stand. It happens to be the first offense. Okay? And in the interest of justice, that magnificent statement they always say, justice is that a person in need should be given the opportunity to have the peace of mind of knowing that the government is not going to penalize them for their need. There's an individual who has been asked for years to live on not enough money to cover all of his expenses. He's recently had a lot of serious infections in his legs, lack of circulation, and the more worried he gets, the harder it is for him to recover from these illnesses. And quite literally, I'm wondering if there's an attorney out there that can still use the need defense. This is civilization. The homeless people are being oppressed. And there's some attorney out there that's going to pick up a very, very fat little settlement for the damages brought to the people and their innocence for being homeless.
Well, on the upside, this defense was used successfully in Albany. We're talking the necessity defense, whereby one commits a crime, such as sleeping in one's vehicle, in order to avoid a greater evil, namely illness, violence from other people, an accident on the
disorientation.
Road. Right.
Disorientation.
Well, a number of people were pushed off of the Albany encampment about 6 months ago. You may be familiar with that case. Several of them were arrested for trespass, and the necessity defense was used. The jury found all of them not guilty in Albany. And also, of course, the ICORN decision earlier this year, means anybody charged with a camping ticket has the right to raise that defense, not just to go to a judge and say, may I raise it, but to raise it. And so it would be really good if that could be done. The problem in our courts, as you know, Mike, is that these are infractions, and you get the judge making the same ruling. You don't get a jury on these cases. You just get a judge.
But it would have to be an infraction. It couldn't possibly ever pass with common law. Every country on this planet, even communists, get to sleep in the street.
And that was an interview held Christmas Day at the Veterans Hall's food line, where there were a lot of hungry folks waiting for one of the two good meals of the year that the town in its magnificence gives out to homeless people, although it denies them the right to sleep. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrop's peer Robert Norris, and our call-in number, if you want to join the show, is 427-3772. 427-3772. We have open lines, and we will talk with you, and you can talk with us and with the community if you want to call in. The necessity defense is something that really hasn't been raised much in Santa Cruz courts. Usually it requires a very rigorous showing of 6 elements for the court, but as I said before, the finding in the ICORN case last year was that if an individual is charged with camping, then he has, or he or she has, the right to raise the necessity defense without elaborate preliminary showings. That's just a matter of right. Because if you can't raise the necessity defense, then the camping laws have to be ruled unconstitutional, and the California Supreme Court could never have that. So instead, they're ruling that you have to allow the necessity defense. We haven't seen a necessity defense, or at least I haven't heard of one in a Santa Cruz courtroom recently. So maybe it's time for us to kind of get down to our law books and get into that. And I understand the Homeless Issues Task Force's legal committee is getting some help from old former attorney and now legal worker Ray Glock Grunike, who used to be the grand old man of the camping ban. He would take every case that came his way, and he got so snowed that he lost his license to practice. Now he's still as wise as ever, and still as much of a wise ass as ever, I might add, if he's listening. But he's also very busy at the moment, rather sick, a lot of flu going around. But he knows a lot about sleeping bans and camping bans, and particularly Santa Cruz. He's defended literally hundreds of cases, and hopefully he will add his expertise, and some other attorneys will kind of sign on to help, because the Homeless Issues Task Force, or Task Farce, as I've called it, is really in trouble. They have really tried to to bring the issues to the public through the City Council. The City Council has, in essence, thwarted them and thrown them aside. This happened most recently in a meeting with Keith Sugar, who had a kind of a special secret closed meeting with some members of the Homeless Issues Task Force, including Linda LeMaster, the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, Ken Cole, vice chair, Sherry Connable, a resigning member of the task force, who has been an on-again, off-again activist. I've had good things and bad things to say about her over the years, more recently bad things, but more about that later. And two other council members, Catherine Byers, the saboteur of any real reform of the sleeping ban, to her shame and to our city's shame, and I guess Christopher Crone, who is always good for a good quack or two, hi-hi, a couple of smiles and some hopeful comments, but unfortunately there doesn't seem to be any sustained effort from anybody to restore basic civil rights to homeless people. There seems to be a sustained effort to bury the issue. The only sustained effort is from the Homeless Issues Task Force, which on December 6th voted for a unanimous recommendation that they go to the City Council immediately and ask that as an emergency resolution this be put on the agenda for a December meeting, which the council refused to do, and Sugar refused to do. He had the power to do it. That's supposedly most liberal of all the council members. And ask just for a discussion of suspending the sleeping and camping bans pending the establishment of safe zones, because 18 people have died this year in the homeless community. There have been scores of beatings. There are camping tickets still being issued and sleeping tickets still being issued. People are still being harassed. And shelter space is available for less than 20% of the homeless community in Santa Cruz. These are really generally agreed upon facts. Even, I suspect, Michael Rotkin would not disagree with me on these issues. He can call in and dispute it if he wishes, but actually I've had him on the show in the last year, and I think he pretty much agrees with that. What he doesn't agree is that homeless people should have the right to sleep at night. It's just, to him, it's like dental care. It's too bad they don't have good dental care, and it's too bad they don't have the right to sleep at night. He doesn't see it as any kind of basic human right. But a lot of us do. Those of us who have circulated the petition to end the sleeping ban, David Silva's fine petition and that of many other people 2 years ago, those of us who sat through months and months of the task force to examine the camping ordinance last winter and then this summer and fall through the task force to homeless issues task force, sorry, which, as I said, came out with some really surprising and good recommendations. Rent stabilization, they said, yes. They asked for safe zones. They asked that real homeless people be appointed as staff members, not the bogus Don Lane political appointee of Catherine Byers and City Manager Dick Wilson, who is taking up the lion's share of the $10,000 and has also been doing some people feel, fancy footwork to avoid getting these issues into the public arena and acting kind of as Catherine Byers' mole in the group and to make sure that the civil rights issues don't go anywhere. The task force has asked that there be, a living wage. They've come out with a lot of really strong suggestions, as well as some very specific proposals. And as a consequence, they put a lot of pressure on Sugar, and he held an emergency meeting on December 12th because he was getting so many phone calls about asking that they put this emergency item on the agenda that the task force unanimously passed on December 6th. And that item was, of course, suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances until there are safe zones. And that those could be designated pretty quickly if the city council had the will to do it, or at least the issue could be discussed if Mayor Sugar was willing to put it on the agenda. And he might lose. He probably would lose. But at least the issue would be raised into the public awareness, and he would be advocating, presumably, for it. Why else put it on the agenda? He indeed advocated for it a year ago. Certainly the homeless situation has not improved in the last year. There's actually less real shelter for homeless people than there was a year ago, since the stated capacity of the armory has been reduced. It's now to only 100 people. So why not? And the answer, of course, is, and I've written a long flyer about this, which should be hitting the streets soon, Sugar doesn't want to do it because he's afraid of offending real mayor Catherine Byers. I call her the real mayor, even though she hasn't been mayor since November, because she is the individual who has the swing vote on the city council. And apparently, I suspect he is perilously afraid of offending this woman who, for years, said she opposed the sleeping ban, but when she got the power, even though before she'd said she couldn't change it because she didn't have the votes, when she got the power, suddenly she just didn't have the interest, didn't have the will, didn't have the courage. It's hard to say. One doesn't want to sit around simply abusing her, but it's hard to find the proper words to describe this because it has a real serious impact on people outside to criminalize them. And also, of course, it scars the conscience of our city that poor people are criminals for simply doing what all of us have to do every night after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz. For those of you who don't know, Municipal Code 6.36.010, the Byers sleeping ban, passed at her behest last March and gone into practice on April, continues to make it illegal for homeless people to either sleep or cover up with blankets on all public property and on most private property. There are some small exceptions. You can go to a church parking lot, 3 vehicles to a parking lot, not outside a vehicle. So you got to own a vehicle. You can park your vehicle in a residential driveway 3 nights per month. The other 27 nights, keep looking for a place. You can park 2 vehicles to a business parking lot with the written permission of the business parking lot. But generally, for most homeless people, there are no legal places to be. The actual act of being after 11 o'clock at night, if you fall asleep, becomes a crime in Santa Cruz. This is a disgrace. It doesn't need to be talked about further. It's true. And the Homeless Issues Task Force unanimously recognized that. Many of the organizations endorsing Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, and Byers, the supposed majority on our progressive city council, also recognized that. They called Sugar en masse. They called him repeatedly, and he held a special emergency kitchen cabinet session on December 12th. Half the people in the room told him, put it on the agenda, or more than half, actually, the notes of Becky Johnson, who got into that meeting, are correct. Because even if you lose, at least you'll have tried, and that's what counts to a lot of people. Sugar was so, I don't know what to say. Was he bullheaded? Was he arrogant? Was he afraid of offending Catherine Byers? Did he really believe his own line that he would be offending the community to do it? Who knows? But he refused to put it on the agenda. And we have an incoming call. Let's pause on this tirade and get some new thoughts. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I was just wondering if you had any information on, like, the surrounding areas, if they have similar ordinances or if they're stricter or less strict. You never really hear about, like...
Sure, let me give you what information I have.
Okay.
The county, we're talking, of course, about the city sleeping ban when I talk about Municipal Code 6.36, and all my criticism is of the city council because they have the power to change the city law.
Right.
The county has a law which makes it illegal to sleep on the road or on county rights of way, which theoretically makes all county property illegal if you to either park a vehicle on, to occupy a vehicle overnight on, it's actually called. Although theoretically, if you weren't in a vehicle, you might legally be sleeping on county property. It's an interesting question. There also are no camping zones in the county, but these are very small. Recently, there's been a bad decision in the court of Art Danner, former DA, a newly crowned judge. A lot of us were sad that he was made judge, which made it. We thought that there is a roadside resting exception. That is, if you're driving through town and you're tired, you can pull over and sleep because for safety purposes you need to do that. That was put into the law by Supervisor Gary Patton back in the mid-80s.
Judge Danner ruled that that only applied to 5% of the county, those very small no-camping zones that make it completely illegal to camp in. And those zones you can pull over and sleep, and who knows where they are. It's amazing. I mean, these are very small areas in the Pass of Tiempo that were, after public hearings, ruled to be no-camping zones. So, though the county is supposedly a camping zone, if you try to sleep in your vehicle by the side of the road, you're subject to a $81 ticket, as Chris, his last name escapes me at the moment, but I was actually at his trial a month ago, found out. Other jurisdictions, Watsonville has a no-sleeping ordinance modeled after Santa Cruz's. Capitola has a no-sleeping ordinance.
That's really surprising.
And I don't think Scotts Valley does. There are some cities that don't have no-sleeping ordinances, such as Berkeley. Berkeley does not have a no-sleeping ordinance.
I'm really surprised Scotts Valley. You'd think
San Francisco does not have a no-sleeping ordinance, but has a no-sleeping in your vehicle ordinance, also no eating in your vehicle after 10 o'clock at night. That's an anti-hippie law that dates from the 70s. So some cities have them, some don't. And, of course, as Michael Rotkin, who favors sleeping bans, will tell you, well, you know, there's some cities that don't have them, but their police just, you know, beat people up or run them out of town. But, in fact, this kind of law in Santa Cruz is really designed to run people out of town, to make it really difficult for them. And I think it increases the mortality rate of homeless people. It adds an additional pressure to them, which I think is likely to make them more likely to get sick, more likely to develop problems, more likely to get involved in drug addiction or other problems like alcoholism. It's also just a basic denial of a human right. You have to be able to sleep at night. Anyway, that's my tirade, you know. Any thoughts of your own? Have you yourself been homeless? Or?
I've had period of homelessness, but I've been lucky enough to have people around that are in better or more comfortable situations. But I was right there, you know, when a couple of friends out of town, and I could have been. Mm-hmm. You know.
What do you think of the sleeping ban?
I think that it needs to be repealed.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah.
Frankly, I think that's the sentiment of a majority of Santa Cruz voters. That's my feeling. I mean, there are some who are apprehensive if the people will be sleeping in their neighborhoods and vehicles, and some who are apprehensive or businesses who are afraid, you know, that there's going to be an invasion of some new Grateful Dead-type group. But generally speaking, people recognize that this is just simply a need that has to be dealt with. You cannot not deal with it. It just creates even more problems if you don't. Yeah.
Is there any other way to repeal it besides through city council?
Yeah, you can try to get it on the ballot. It takes 3,900 registered city voters. It usually takes a financial investment. You've got to have a couple thousand dollars. You've got to have a couple dozen signature gatherers. Paid signature gatherers are the best. You've got to have an organization that's doing it. We tried it with a kind of a more informal organization, but El Nino and Sickness are the main organizers, and defeated the attempt last. It was 97, 98 that we tried it. So, and the other thing is, the city council could put it on the ballot for an election for in November. I suppose that's something they could do if they don't have the balls to, or the ovaries, if you will, more balls than ovaries, I guess, to put it, you know, to actually vote it in and say, hey, we're going to give people human rights. If you don't like it, vote us out. Unfortunately, you know, Sugar can't even put it on the agenda, and that's what I was talking about. And actually, I'm about to play an interview with Ken Cole, who's the head of the Homeless Services Center and the vice chair of this Homeless Issues Task Force, which, by the way, meets on Monday, if people are interested, at 5:30 at the Civic Center Auditorium in the ABC room. That's across from City Hall, in the kind of kitty corner from the library. And, you know, you can check that out.
That's every week?
It's actually only once or twice a month.
Oh, wow.
And so it'll be a special meeting on Monday night, if you want to put it on your calendar, 5:30. If you miss any of this stuff, if you don't catch the phone numbers we're giving out, or if you don't catch the places, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll get back to you by phone. There should be actually somebody standing by on the HUFF line right now. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for those who aren't regularly following the show. And what's your name, caller?
I'm David.
Hey, David, anything you want to bring up? I've been babbling at you a mile now.
No, I was just also wondering if you knew anything about the new kind of like bungalows over by River Street Shelter. There seems to be like permanent, I think it's like, I forgot what it's called. is named after somebody.
Oh, you're talking about the Page Smith Community
House? Yeah, Page Smith.
Page Smith Community House is sort of a multi-million dollar project which got a lot of federal funding, which may be cut off soon, leaving them in quite a tizzy, which gives shelter, housing, and some sort of, I guess it's case management programs to 40 homeless people. And so doing, you know, it's a good thing. However, I should point out it supplanted a campground, an emergency campground that was there for two, three years, actually longer than that if you consider what's a more informal basis, that housed scores or at some point even hundreds of people, not in the best conditions, and you'll hear a lot of people remembering it was a swamp and there was violence and there was drug use, you know. But now, of course, what you do is you've driven all that into the bushes. The mortality rate is higher, and you don't have places where people can go to group together in any semi-safe way. And you know, comparatively speaking, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was a safer place than most places.
So, is there some kind of prerequisites to getting into that place?
Yeah, you have to. It's one of these, you know, clean and sober creaming programs. I mean, you have to be the creme de la creme.
Right.
But you know, you should go check it out. I think I have heard there are vacancies there. You go in during the day, talk to P.J. Babcock, who is the head of the program, and tell them you're interested, and you can, you know, fill out the forms and get into it, get up.
Is that a fairly reasonable person?
Sure. I mean, yeah. I know some people who live there. They're good people, and
cool.
You know, any program in a storm, it's just right now what they're doing is they're saying 95% of homeless people don't deserve the right to sleep at night, but we'll give some special, you know, intense coverage to 2 or 3%, and then pat ourselves on the back.
Right.
That kind of makes me sick, you know.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, David.
Bye.
So if this situation upsets you, I have a temporary solution for you. Give a call immediately right now, even though it would seem that nobody would be there, but indeed it's an automatic 24-hour number, to City Council at 420-5020. That's 420-5020. And tell Mayor Keith Sugar and Shadow Mayor Catherine Byers, it's time to put the Homeless Issues Task Force's emergency resolution on the agenda for January 11th. That's their next meeting. They have a kind of a thing on the agenda for the afternoon, which is the midterm report of the Homeless Issues Task Force, but that's not really the same thing. It's not an action item. Tell them it's time for some action, time to for some real protection for homeless people, time to raise the discussion to a level where action can really be taken instead of hiding from the issue. This is disgraceful. It's something that we have to force the City Council to face because they won't without community pressure. 420-5020. Call a friend, have her or him also call 420-5020 and say, end the sleeping ban, put it on the agenda for the next Tuesday council meeting. I know this sounds like an incredibly familiar refrain to most folks out there listening. Unfortunately, it is, and it has to be done again and again and again until it gets done. It's like one of those things. You keep rolling the boulder up the hill and it keeps crashing into your head. However, one of these days we'll reach the top of the hill, and then we can start actually working on the next thing, which has to do with getting beyond sleeping. It's an amazingly, endlessly slow process. Okay, now I've got to make sure I have the right tape, and when I do, I'm going to press right ahead here. Let's double check, and let's hear from Jim the Poet, who has a word or two for us.
We're talking to that man about the streets, sometimes street spirit vendor, sometimes poet, who knows what else, Jim.
Sometimes desirable and sometimes undesirable, depending on who you're talking to. I was working Saturday with one of my regular customers, and we needed a few items at San Lorenzo Lumber, including a couple of laborers.
What kind of work do you normally do?
Construction, cleanup, painting, you know, just regular man about tools.
Uh-huh.
So there was a heavy sofa bed we had to move. We were going to hire a couple guys for an hour to help us. And the officer involved...
His name was?
Connor.
Oh, dear.
Motorcycle officer.
I'm familiar with Officer Connor.
Parked in a non-obvious spot between the cars in San Lorenzo parking lot, private property.
Oh, dear. One bike goes to heaven? Or
so that he was not easily seen. And then, of course, as soon as we stopped there on River Street, he swooped out and handed my buddy a ticket worth about $104.
And the ticket was for?
Not obeying a sign.
Which was?
No stopping any time.
Well, this is to stop people from picking up laborers.
The first thing out of his mouth was, this has nothing to do with you picking up these gentlemen.
What did it have to do with? The color of your shirt?
I think stopping in the no stopping zone. But the guy I hired, we only needed him for a few minutes. We took him back when we were finished. I ran into him that evening, and he told me that there were 5 such performance awards given out that morning.
But 5 out of what? Dozens of stops?
Who knows? I imagine anybody that stopped while he was there got it.
He just bought for
So the question, I guess, is how? When was this again?
Saturday, the 18th, December.
Today is first Monday.
I have no problem with getting a ticket if you're breaking the law, stopping in a no stopping. The problem I have is the sneaky hiding of the motorcycle and the first words out of his mouth being, "This has nothing to do with you stopping to talk to the laborers." When it obviously that's what's going on
there. He could have warned you to move around the corner, for instance.
I mean, it wasn't like we were causing any. He said we were impeding flow of traffic.
And if he'd really wanted to encourage that, he could have been parked more visibly, which might have given you
We would say, there's an officer. I'm not going to stop here.
Right, because is it your observation that it's been the practice of people to stop there in spite of the signs?
Yeah.
Right, that's...
I think if there's a problem with people stopping there and they don't want people to stop there, and I think parking the motorcycle in a visible spot would be much more effective than go ahead and letting the offense occur and then citing the person.
Yeah, but it wouldn't make as much money.
No.
Anything else you want to say to Free Radio?
I wonder if the point is that we all want to get along and obey the laws and have a nice, smooth-running society, or do we want to add money to the city coffers?
And... you don't know the answer to that one. It's back to the back of the class for you, son.
I think we all know the answer to that one.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
It's January 6th, 2000. Wow. Yeah. Hard to say it. And we're talking to Ken Cole, who's executive director of the Homeless Services Center, is also the vice chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, and has been... an activist up in Seattle for rights for homeless people. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
I'm good. It looks like you got a variety of hats on, and you've been working with the Homeless Issues Task Force for, 3 or 4 months now?
It seems 3 going on 4.
And what's happened with that task force in the last 3 or 4 months?
Well, I think we have put a lot of energy into trying to find a way to effectively work together on a very complex socioeconomic issue. The rubric homelessness is, as you know very well, extremely large. A lot of pain, misery, violence, social ills under that rubric. But
18 deaths this year, I hear, in Santa Cruz.
Well, we have a lot of people to mourn. A lot passage of a lot of people. People die very early on the streets. And as you know, a lot of violence. And but back to the task force, we've basically been given the impossible task of trying to do something about homelessness. I think it's pretty impossible for a small community like Santa Cruz to effectively combat this problem. But that's kind of where we are. And we've spent a number of months studying the issue. We've spent time talking with homeless people. We've heard from some of the government planners, and we're getting now to the point of making some recommendations.
Well, your task force has been, at least in conservative quarters, I imagine, rather controversial, and I guess on the other side as well. Some people, including myself, called your group a task farce that was simply put together to kind of provide a SOP for those people who had hoped to see a real change in the sleeping ban ordinance last spring. And in fact, your enabling law was passed in March, went into effect in April, or I guess went into effect in March, because it wasn't really a law, it was a city ordinance. And you didn't get a, you know, a meeting together till August, and then I guess, you know, you didn't get a full component until October.
Well, you know, the wheels of government spin and turn slowly.
Yes, indeed.
Even on emergency issues.
Yet the first
and
thing...
I don't believe that, first of all, that local government in Santa Cruz really understands how emergent the situation is. I know that's hard to imagine from your perspective, but I think that these things move very slowly. I think that
are they
maybe we may be controversial in some ways because we've taken some very clear civil rights stands.
I was going to say, are they moving at all? But then I realized that, as you just said, the first thing your task force did was to ask, I guess on your resolution, that the camping ordinance be repealed. Because given you have a shelter emergency here in Santa Cruz, shelter space for less than 20% in the winter and 5% in the summer, violence and beatings of homeless people, estimates range from 20 to 60 beatings since January, and of course the deaths we mentioned before, and you moved to have this this passed, and I guess it passed fairly quickly, but it didn't seem to go anywhere in city council when it tried to wind its way through the labyrinth in October and November, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that any time you have a group of citizens trying to wrestle with this problem, you have to start first with the emergency and